Hey everybody, welcome to episode 2 of the Never Hand Over podcast. Adam here.
Hey everybody, this is Brian, ready to talk some pro wrest.
Yeah, and we got another, we thought this was going to be a short episode, folks, but we came up with Brian came up with a huge list of stuff here for us to discuss, and I've got quite the format written out here.
Well, we're going to talk most prominently about Survivor Series 2014. We're going to try to keep the episode under an hour, so we will see. We'll work at a breakneck pace. Some of the other segments will be quite short, just going to touch base on a couple things. Before we get into Survivor Series, Adam, some housekeeping notes, anything that you want to mention?
Like Brian said, this is going to be kind of a quick episode, hopefully under an hour, because I've got to get up for work at 6 a.m. and recording this at 11 p.m. The night before. So,
yeah, I feel you, man. I got to do screen a couple movies tonight before I hit the sack for my other podcast, decadesofcinema.blogspot.com. And so the Night Owls are up tonight. But, yeah, man, tell them about the Twitter and what else is going on with NHO.
Before we get started, Survivor Series, just a couple of housekeeping things. We've got the blog going on, so go over there, check that out. Before we started recording, I just posted a new entry into the 2001 WCW Odyssey.
Cool, man.
Nitro After Sin with a really fun Kevin Nash-Scott Steiner match.
Oh, man.
And Chronic doing some absolutely crazy things, including Bryan Adams doing a running, jumping mule kick. So please.
Well, you know, sometimes your body will, you know, involuntarily do that when you're on horse tranquilizers. You know? So Kevin Nash having a fun match, like, post-96. I gotta see this.
I mean, it wasn't long. It was like 4 or 5 minutes, but it was fun. I mean, he seemed really motivated, but regardless, go check that out on the blog. We also have Twitter. It's at NeverHandOver. Please feel free to follow us on there if you like the show.
I want to let people know that check out NHO on the reg. Your boy Brian's got a new article in the works. I will be taking an in-depth look at the Brock Lesnar-Undertaker match from WrestleMania 30. I don't know how many years ago back, I did one of these on Chris Jericho versus Triple H from, I believe, WrestleMania 17. And what I'm doing is I'm trying to look at the most maligned matches from WrestleMania history and reevaluate them, going in completely, you know, opening up my mind and experiencing them anew. And so at some point when the DVD hits my mailbox, I will be taking a look at Undertaker Lesnar. It'll be my second time seeing it. And so look for that in December on the blog.
Yeah, that should be fun. I think you wrote a thesis on Jericho and Triple H from Mania.
Yeah, man. I uncovered
18, not 17.
Good. Yes. Absolutely. And that's another reason why that was so interesting, because it went on after Rock and Hogan. But yeah, man, there's layers to the onion, and I hope to uncover some. Let's talk why we got WWE on the brain and tongue. Let's do some Survivor Series 2014, man.
Real quick before we get into that, we also have email. You can get email, nhopodcast@yahoo.com. And I want to send a quick shout out before we get too far along here to a good friend of ours, Carl Stern. He is having some health issues right now, and he would be very appreciative if you could go over to his blog and help him out, donate towards some of his health issues. Check him out at dragonkingcarl.blogspot.com. He has plugged a show on his podcast at wrestlingobserver.com, and we said if you do that, we will gladly return the favor here. So, Carl, we're pulling for you, buddy.
Yeah, man. Big ups to Carl, man. Get better, dude.
And we got some more news regarding Carl here later on at the end of the show, so hopefully we can get him to the show here. So we'll expound on that a little bit later. But yeah, Brian, let's get to Survivor Series.
So he's got my 8x10 glossy prints that Sean Stacy had printed up, I'm guessing.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. So Survivor Series 2014, man. On my cable box here on Time Warner Cable, it came up for $54.99. That's 6 months of the WWE Network. For this show, are you kidding me? Adam, I want to preface this by saying we've never really scored shows. In fact, it's never been done. But I just want to go ahead and open up the floodgates and say if I was putting a number on this, we also don't do half stars or half points, as it were. But this is like a 4.5 out of 10 show, if there ever was one.
Yeah.
It needed something else to get it to that 5, which is just middle of the road. But it didn't even get there. there's some big development on this show. If you're coming into this recap blind, you know, there is some news. But, Adam, I did not get to see Fandango versus Justin Gabriel, nor did I get to see the five-minute Jack Swagger-Cesaro affair. Did you catch any of the pre-show matches?
Yeah, I watched the whole pre-show, watched the whole main show. The pre-show, you didn't really miss much. Fandango looked about like he always did. He's got a new Latin dancer gimmick now with Rose.
Yeah, the Strictly Ballroom shtick.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's it freshens him up a little bit. Cesaro and Jack Swagger was...
Yeah, I think that's like Queer Eye for the Jobber Guy.
Yeah,
I think it's a new pilot they're trying to spin off with the Total Divas action on E! Network.
Yeah,
so Cesaro loses clean in 5 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what you would expect. It was a Raw match. It was nothing more, nothing less. Cesaro got the quick heel heat by coming out claiming he is pro authority. Swagger came out, said he was pro Cena. There we go. And Cesaro will never, ever win another match, it looks like.
It's going to be a while. So the pay-per-view proper kicked off with the 15-minute affair, Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match. The champions, Goldust and Stardust, defended the belts against The Miz and Damian Mizdow, The Usos, and Los Matadors. Adam, this match felt very pat, very sort of flat. There was a finishing stretch where they broke out some bells and whistles. But I got to say, not only on SmackDown expressively, but also Raw, but even on Main Event this past week, they've been pairing up these teams in different pairs. Are different iterations of these matchups. So, you know, it wasn't fresh. And in fact, it wasn't as good as some of the stuff that's aired on the B and C level shows. So you predicted it right on the first episode of NHO podcast. Mizdow and Miz ended up with the straps. And Damian Mizdow got the pin, which was, you know, it did pop the house.
It did, yeah.
But as a match, man, this was the WWE tag team scene is in desperate need. Some fresh blood.
Yeah, I'm with you. It felt really flat. I was hoping for some good stuff. I mean, when this match was first announced, I was like, yeah, this will be a fun little match. It felt like a basic TV match. It felt like a Raw match or a SmackDown even. I liked the Tower of Doom spot they did right at the end with Goldust and Goldust, Stardust, and the Matadors.
Yeah. You know, and I liked everybody in Super Kicks besides Miz, who ducked his head away like he was afraid he was going to catch a ball hole on a plant or something. The guy needs to man up and learn to eat some offense, man, if he's going to make it on my ear-in ballot.
Yeah.
Up next was a match, Adam, that was very polarizing. Well, not even so much polarizing. It seemed like most people were pretty down on it, and I was not, actually. In fact, 4-4, traditional Survivor Series elimination tag. Team Fox versus Team Page, and when we previewed this episode, when we previewed this match, I should say, we were kind of cautiously optimistic. I will say at 14 minutes, it got a lot of time, for better or worse. Some people were calling for this as one of the worst pay-per-view matches of the year, and I just don't see it, man. I thought it was perfectly fine. Maybe a couple things looked, a little soft, but... Team Fox went over strong. The bases dominated.
They did. And I felt this... How long did you say this went? 17 minutes?
This went 14 and a half.
14 and a half. It felt like it went 20 and a half to me. This felt like it was just aimless, man. You know, the team... Natalya's team. Natalya barely got in the match. Alicia Fox was in there. And
Structurally, there were some issues. I'm not here to cite it as a work of art,
it was not.
I did not find it to be, an excruciating affair. And plus, some of the girls got some, decent PPV time.
Yeah, Emma got some decent PPV time. I'm not sure that they dance like that all the way down in everybody dances like that down in Australia. I have to ask my Tegan down there. I doubt she dances like that, but we'll have to see.
I know Tin Koji got a lot of votes on the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame this year, but what about the Slayers, a.k.a. Layla and Summer Rae, their team name, the Slayers, man? Are they drumming up any interest over on your side of the street?
I didn't even know they had a team name. I like Summer Rae. Layla, I can kind of give or take. she's just right now kind of floating in the ether. She's there. She's not there. I mean, I really don't miss her when she's gone.
I will say the MVP of this match most definitely was Naomi. Her athletic spots were on point. The head scissors thing that she did was cool. She got big air. So moving on to Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose. And again, Adam, it was almost as if we could peer into the future. Mm-hmm. On the first episode of this show, everything we said came to a head. Yep. I predicted that this match would be the first in a consecutive series of matches. And they've already announced at TLC in a Tables, Lyles, and Chairs match, Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt will have a rematch. But what was great about this match, though, was the physical intensity that the two brought to it.
Yeah, it was probably up to that point, it was the best match on the show by far.
Yeah,
I'd say I'd go so far. I mean, it was definitely the second best match on a 5-match card.
I mean, even with the somewhat silly finish, you know, just Bray Wyatt breaking out the microphone and an angle heavy, story heavy finish, right. I should say. I still thought the work alone was enough to merit it. Probably the match of the night. You know, these guys were taking each other's heads off. They were throwing their weight into every strike and blow and bounding off the ropes.
Yeah, I mean,
they had that sick double clothesline spot, which rattled their spines.
Ambrose took at one point, I think he took an exceptionally sick clothesline, just kind of turned him inside out.
Well, he took a bump on the ring steps.
Like, yeah.
Man. And, you know, so I liked the appetizer. And so now I'm ready for the next course and ultimately the entree. It may be a little dessert. We'll see where this this thing goes and where it leads. You know, I hope both guys look strong coming out of it. I'm more so in the Ambrose camp, but hey, yeah. Hopefully it does both guys well.
True.
Adam, the next match was a unannounced match. It was made on the program.
Ugh.
Team, Slater Gator. Heath Slater and Titus O'Neil. Versus Adam Rose and the Bunny. This went 2:36.
Yeah, no thanks.
And, those 3 minutes you're not getting back, brother.
No, never. I never wanted. I did not want to. As soon as they saw that backstage, because like they're gonna set up a match on the. They're gonna set
when
up.
You're hooked up to defibrillators, man, in your hospital bed, and you're thinking about you're flashing all these moments back in your life. You're gonna think about Slater Gator.
No,
the Bunny.
One of the last things I'm going to think about. Adam Rose and the Bunny. I'm so done with this Adam Rose guy. Completely done with him. If he turned heel, I'd like him. But right now, okay. He is probably the most annoying thing to me on WWE television.
Well, the guy's like 35, 30, almost 36 years old. I mean, you can look up his career. He hasn't done a lot. He did some work in South Africa. But predominantly, he's a product of FCW and the WWE system. And, I mean, I'm sure him and Big E had a match or two that was worthwhile in that run. But
since
he's brought up to the Big Show, man, the character has been trash. It's like turn off the TV stuff, man. But
I hate Russell Brand. I hate Adam Rose. So
yeah,
there's that.
Let's send both of them on the spaceship Endurance from Interstellar and let them go off and get lost in a black hole, man. Speaking of black holes, before we go to the next match, Adam, the Bunny, who's under it and why? Who do you think should be?
I was thinking about this during the show, and whoever they reveal to be the Bunny, since it's such a silly thing, it's going to instantly kill their career.
Well,
opinion.
You know, it's how do you, you know, you're always going to be got that over your head that you were the Bunny. I think it's Rob Naylor, man. I think after he got canned from, you know, his announcing duties. No, but I don't know, man. And who knows?
I just know.
What a reveal, though, man. That's the big mystery coming into 2015. WWE programming.
It's just whoever's revealed as the Bunny and the end up, it's just going to destroy their career. They're never, it's going to be one of these things they will never, ever recover from. Like the old.
If he was sweating profusely, I would think it was Val Venus, but it's, you know.
It's I've definitely not him.
Oh, man. So the next match, man, WWE Championship.
Maybe the Bunny could be Santino.
It could be, man, but Santino is not that graceful. In fact, that reminds me, I just cracked open the first chapter of Chris Jericho's third book that just released, and he takes a couple shots at at Santino and their very lackluster match, his first Raw back from his absence. But no, let's go ahead and talk about the WWE's, tongue twister here, WWE Divas Championship match. In the space that it took me to spit that out, that was the length of the match. It went 35 seconds.
Yeah.
Nikki Bella went over AJ Lee. We're filming this in lieu of actually watching Raw live, so it's happening as we're recording this. So we'll see it later, certainly. But so I don't know how the angle has been advanced. But Brie Bella helped Nikki win, and Brie Bella seemed happy to do something heel. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to pontificate and try to get into the minds of the writing staff.
No, that'd be
we'll
an
see how it
stuff.
Plays out. It wasn't a big loss having the match go short. I wouldn't have mind them getting, you know, 6 to 9 minutes, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. I think this is probably going to end up with being Bella versus Bella for the Divas title, either TLC or Rumble. One of the two.
Well, hopefully it's in a
horrible feud.
Hopefully it's, you know, in a chairs match.
Oh, my God, no.
They can just lambaste each other.
Can we do Bella versus Bella in a ladder match?
Can we do them in a coal miner's glove match, man?
I don't think they know what a coal miner's glove is.
Well, you know, it wasn't Vince's idea, so it's got to go on the shelf. Let's talk about the main event, Adam, because it went 43 minutes, and hopefully we can tackle it in less than three.
Yeah.
Team Cena, which was Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Big Show, Eric Rowan, and Ryback against Team Authority, Seth Rollins, Kane, Mark Henry, Rusev, and Luke Harper. I went through that quickly because if you've been watching WWE programming the last 2 to 3 weeks, they've beat this match over your head, so you should have it firmly cemented. Adam, the match went 43, man. As I was kind of watching the clock, as I was watching the show, I was like, man, this is going to get some time, and it certainly did.
The first half of the match, I really wasn't into all that much, but the second half, after Big Show turned, he did his yearly heel face switch over. I was really into it. Seeing Ziggler having to beat three people, you know, can he win it for Team Cena? I was really hooked into this.
My two take a couple things. One is that if ever there was a time to maybe make Cena go heel, a lot of people thought this would be the night.
Mm-hmm.
Not only, you know, it was perfectly set up as far as storyline to pull the rug out of from underneath everybody's feet, but there was also, you know, this being for free, first time ever, JW pay-per-view, a big audience tuning in, it would have definitely lit a spark. So I was kind of hoping to see something big from Cena's way, but he was a background player, actually, in the entire affair. But it was, but on the flip side, this was a big, probably the biggest push Dolph Ziggler's ever gotten. And he ran with the ball, called it and ran with it. And so big things maybe ahead for Ziggler. You know, we don't want to be presumptuous, but
I think that would be cool. I mean, that would be really, really nice and freshen up. It would freshen up TV a lot, freshen up that title scene a lot.
Yeah, man. And I think it's kind of unfortunate that the two titles were merged because if there was a heel champion, like I'm thinking of like Alberto Del Rio's run on SmackDown, like it would be awesome seeing Ziggler tussle with somebody for, you know, a major belt. But obviously they're going to keep him miles away from Brock Lesnar.
What's the over-under on Lesnar versus Ziggler at WrestleMania?
I want to go ahead and make a prediction now, Adam. And it occurred to me the other day, either Roman Reigns or Daniel Bryan, one of the two will make a surprise entrant as number 30 at the Royal Rumble, will win it and go on to take on Lesnar. So mark my words, I said that November 24th.
I think that's going to be, I think that'll be Reigns.
And you can take that to the bank. Adam, we got to talk about what happened at the end of this match, man. As somebody who grew up with purple and yellow running through my veins, WCW, I saw Sting walk out, man.
I know, and that was probably that was one of the most surreal moments ever for me as a wrestling fan. Sting is the one guy that's never made the jump to WWE.
Here he was, man. It was shocking. And, you know, but here's the thing. WWE has one of the best wardrobe departments in the world. You know, right up there with any, you know, Broadway company. why didn't they get this guy some hair extensions, man? Hair, man, just, oh, it says, you know, well, it says 50-year-old golf playing, you know, a dad of three, and that's Steve, man. So, but the face-off was pretty cool.
It was.
The only way that I would have done it any differently, and I kept waiting for it to happen, and it never did, is I kept waiting for the black baseball bat to slide out of his trench coat pocket and him to just blast him with it. We didn't quite get that, but we did get to see him do his finish to the Triple H. He sold it pretty well. And Adam, that's going to lead us to our next segment. Before we hit that, though, and I'll lead us into it, any final thoughts on Survivor Series?
It felt like more of this was a show you really had to fight to survive to stay awake on, for me.
It was it's perfectly middle of the road, and I gotta say,
it felt more like a Clash of the Champions special.
Oh yeah, I wish it had the grace of Jared versus Mongo, but you know, Adam, to me, I took and I want to talk about this topic at length on another episode. I watch wrestling religiously for almost 30 years straight. From about mid-February to mid-August of this year, I took a pretty pronounced break.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, like, I'm fresh and I'm ready to watch wrestling. But even though my tolerance for the current product is probably higher than some others who might be suffering burnout, I have to admit that the product is milquetoast, man. The product is bland. It's vanilla. This pay-per-view felt so safe. And just, you know, there was... Besides, you know, Sting's big thing. And so I got to say that's a major criticism of the current product. Now, I'm not alone.
No, I'm with you there. If this was any night to blow people out of the water with a show, this would have been the show because the network was free. They were trying to hook subscribers. But instead, you put on a show that basically it's a one-match show, the main event, and the rest of it.
Pay-per-views, I mean, are really structured so similarly and so... You know, by the numbers. I mean, when was the last time they had two guys, like, I'm thinking back when they did the dungeon match in Stu Hart's basement and somebody's head got ran through the ceiling. I mean, that's, you know, they never do things outside of the norm anymore. When was the last time two guys fought down into the Mississippi, like Bob Holly and Al Snow? Where are these moments that get you talking the next day at the water cooler or at your locker in high school? I ain't seeing them on my dial.
No, I'm not. I mean, even WWE didn't have them like in 07, 08, but TNA had them, if you remember back. That I actually enjoyed that last rights match where they fought like in the graveyard or they had those flaming coffins or in that whatever that parking lot surrounded by fire. I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, if they do wacky stuff like that, I think that's completely fine.
Yeah, I mean, let's get a Buried Alive match on one of these, you know, kind of middle of the road pay-per-views, you know, kind of. But anyway, I digress, man. So let's talk about Sting real quick. Obviously, the direction that they appear to be heading, from what we gather, is Triple H Sting. But there's a lot of flack online that's maybe not the match to go with. And I'm hearing some of the arguments. I'm hearing some of the arguments, and some of them are making good points. I mean, for example, Dolph Ziggler come out of this match a star. He could really use the rub of beating a Triple H at a marquee show like WrestleMania. Would that be a better use of Triple H?
I don't know. I think if you did, everybody obviously wants the Sting Undertaker match, but I really don't see that happening because I really don't see Undertaker coming back for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
He got beat. There's nothing left for him to defend. Now, that being said, I think Triple H is probably one of the best bets in that company to get Sting through a big WrestleMania match. Because if you watch some of Sting's old TNA work, it really wasn't the best. But I think Triple H can get the best out of him, if anybody...
There's to play devil's advocate and not to disagree. But, you know, two points. One, Triple H, Scott Steiner. I was going to throw that out
there.
That
was all Scott Steiner. That wasn't Triple H.
But also, two, and here's the other devil's advocate point. Sting's best work in TNA is when there was somebody young that was hungry and wanted to fire up the Sting of old. And I'm talking about like Samoa Joe when they brawled through the crowd down the stairs. You know, what if it was a young guy that grew up on Sting that wanted to take Sting and you know, maybe turn it into something memorable and classic. But, you know, who knows? you know, Sting could be paired off with a lot of these different guys. He could be paired off with a Kane or a Big Show, who's now went heel again. But, you know, and one of the posters, I was reading the feedback over on Pro Wrestling Only, one of the few message boards I will check out, and I can't remember the poster offhand, but somebody was saying that Batista has been quoted as saying he wants a big retirement match against Triple H. And I honestly think that would also be another interesting use of Triple H. I think the only person to have better matches with Batista in his career was, well, not Cena, but actually Undertaker. But I think Triple H and Batista could have something there. But we'll see. I mean, it seems obvious at this point that it's going to be
a long way away.
It is. And so we're just speculating here openly.
And one more thing on the Sting front here, before we move on to our next topic. If you look this year in WWE, there were two major watershed moments. There was Undertaker's streak ending, and then there was Sting's debut. These were the moments that these were like the last two big watershed moments in wrestling. Do you see any more of these major moments left?
Man, this was one of those ones that, yeah, had to be checked off the list. I mean, Undertaker losing this streak. I wouldn't know what it would be offhand, man.
I don't either. See, I think that well's dry now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what it could possibly be. I mean, maybe Greg Gagne could... No, I'm just kidding. I don't know, man. I think you're right. And that's why it was a little bit of history, man. Seeing it happen, I was a kid again for a few minutes. And then I had, you know, Stephanie McMahon screeching as the show went off. And yeah, it kind of brought me right back to reality, soberingly. Yep. Adam, up next, man, we got a couple short bits that we're going to roll out here. Yep. And then we're going to put this to bed. So up next, man, the first episode.
Before we started our next topic, we did it on the last show. It was If Not Diesel, Then Who? We got some good feedback on that, so we're bringing it back with a different person. Brian, you want to go ahead and introduce it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say the same thing. People like that segment, so we're going to continue to play it. I've actually got several of these in my head for future episodes. They're going to get weird and wacky, man. But for this one, it literally came out of left field, and I just figured, why not, man? So WrestleMania 2, you know, yeah, there was a flag match with Kurt Noll Kirshner, but what everybody remembers is the main event. You had Hogan, King Kong Bundy. The reception of that match at the time and since, you know, is not hot. It, obviously, it's forgotten in the shadow of Andre Hogan. And so, Adam, you know, I just want to propose an hypothetical question. If not King Kong Bundy to get that spot, which was a huge spot, main event with the biggest star in the known wrestling world, Hulk Hogan, who would you have slotted in that spot that night?
Well, I've done some research here, as I did on the Diesel topic. I came up with four names. I'm not sure how many, if you came up with any names, but here's who I came up with. I came up with either Roddy Piper, Big John Studd, Paul Orndorff, or Randy Savage.
I got two names, and those aren't them, man.
Oh.
Those are not them. Okay, let me set the scene for you, Adam. Los Angeles Memorial Sports Arena. The lights are dim. The smell of popcorn and Coca-Cola is abundant. Hogan comes out to the ring. Of your four picks, if you had to put your money on one guy, who would you have wanted to see in that position? Who would have left a more indelible impression on wrestling history by being in that position? I got to know, man. Who would you go with?
I'd have to go with Piper. Because Piper, you could base the match off the match at WrestleMania, the tag match at WrestleMania 1, and have them, yeah, they did the match at the Wrestling Classic pay-per-view. But let's face it, nobody remembers that pay-per-view. Nobody knows that match even happened, unless you're a hardcore, diehard WWE fan. But if you come back and do that match, Piper versus Hogan, singles match for the title at WrestleMania 2, that is probably the biggest match you could possibly do at that time period. And let's face it, it would have been better than Piper fighting Mr. T in a absolutely horrible boxing match.
That's true. I mean, I think you could roll it back and do it a second time and main event another WrestleMania. You know, I could see that. That's a good pick. You know, Adam, as you bring kind of a historian background to things, and so maybe your picks might be a little bit more logical or rational. Sometimes my picks in the future and on this episode might be a little bit wilder or more wacky. I mean, last time I had actually – I failed to mention for the last thing, if not Diesel, then who. I was kind of wanting to go out of, you know, go into international waters and bring some names from, you know, different areas into the mix, like Nobuhiko Takada. But for my two guys, getting back to WrestleMania 2, narrowing my focus, I got my runner-up and my choice. I'm going to give my choice first because I think – he makes a little bit more sense.
Okay.
Terry Funk.
You know, Terry Funk was one person I actually thought of including on my list, but I was going through some of the results. Again, you can go to historyofwwe.com. All the information you ever need on researching, you know, the 3-4 big promotions is there. You're never going to run out of information. But I was just kind of going – I was researching the you know, the early months of 86 into the spring up into WrestleMania. And those were the four names that jumped out at me. Piper, Studd, Orndorff, and Savage. Funk started off the year hot. He had that match with Hogan on Saturday night's main event. But then he just kind of died off.
Yeah. Yeah, Funk, you know, he was a victim of circumstance. I mean, I think a lot of that was beyond his control. I mean, he was on the card teaming with Hoss Funk.
Yep.
You know,
and that wasn't a bad match.
But realizing what he is capable of and knowing the type of just, you know, born charismatic nature of a Terry Funk, you know, he could have bled, he could have brawled, he could have made that WrestleMania 2 main event be one that would not be as quickly forgotten to time. And so that's why he's my pick.
No, that's true.
And that's why sometimes we have to think outside of the context of what, you know, because, yeah, again, Terry Funk, you know how his career went when he was working under McMahon, but, you know, presupposing that, what could have happened? My second pick, Velvet McIntyre. No, I'm kidding, man, I'm kidding. My second pick, and this one, again, we talk about, you know, playing it out differently than it went down. This one is going in a complete different direction, and it's a bold choice, but Junkyard Dog, Adam.
You know,
here's a guy who never really had this hill run, at least in WWF, maybe anywhere. He was one of the biggest stars of the 1980s, period, anywhere in the world. His run in Mid-South is legendary. In WWF, he was always kind of treated as a bit character, mm-hmm. You know, as a side attraction, if that. Have this beloved, you know, regional character wrap a chain around his hand and crack Hulk Hogan's skull, you know, on television in the weeks preceding this. Have him just turn on the crowd and spit on the crowd and say, "You guys don't respect me." Have this guy become just the meanest, most threatening possible opposition to the beloved Hulk Hogan. And have those guys square off in a cage and beat the leather out of each other. I mean, I would have paid my money to see that. I think all the people at the Rosemont Horizon and at the Nassau Coliseum would have jumped in their cars and headed all the way out to L.A. to see that match, man. That would have been a barn burner.
That would have been a barn burner.
And that would have not only would it have saved WrestleMania 2, but it would have saved JYD's career possibly because he never was able to gain that fame and glory that he had when he was working under Watts.
Well, funny you should mention. I mean, you mentioned JYD because he was on that. He was in that Terry Funk tag.
Yeah, he was in the same tag. You know, I don't have the data in front of me, Adam, but like another option that just kind of sprung to my mind. I don't know who was kind of the lead heels at that time in AWA. I can assume maybe some Jerry Blackwell or some of these other guys, but that would have also been kind of cool to do. Kind of a prelude to what would happen in the future with your kind of interpromotional or invading angles is have somebody kind of pop up unexpectedly, maybe work out an agreement. I don't know. That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, but, this is April of 86. So you're thinking your top heels in AWA would be like you mentioned Blackwell, Nick Bockwinkel, Stan Hansen, people like that.
God, can you imagine Hansen? Which I've seen, you know, but can you imagine that match at that time period, Hansen and Hogan?
Well, here's something else to think about is if you had WrestleMania 2 in April of 86, I think later that month, a few weeks later, you had WrestleRock 86. Look at the people on that card. You could have taken some of the people from that card and plugged maybe, let's say, Harley Race into a Bundy spot. Now you got a huge match.
Yeah.
Hogan and absolutely. Harley Race, that would draw big money, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that would be huge. There's a lot of guys that could have possibly gotten it. And not to knock on Bundy, man. And it's been a while since I've went back and watched some of his, you know, mid-80s work. I'm sure he held up his deal as far as being a monster heel.
He did. And we're not knocking Bundy or anything like that. We're just theorizing here. If not Bundy, then who else? What are some of the other options? Let's say Bundy, you know, got hurt. Who else could they have plugged in there? We're just theorizing here.
Yeah, I mean, we'll continue to do these. I mean, if not Ian Rotten to give me my sixth combo at Taco Bell, then who? I mean, could it have been... No, I'm just playing. Adam, these next few segments are rapid fire. We're going to wind it down here. Yeah, I just want to give a quick update. ROH, you actually broke the news to me that final battle was going to be on live pay-per-view. It's not going to be on an iPay-per-view. It's not going to be on a delayed pay-per-view. It's actually going to be live from New York City.
And that's actually a show I'm considering ordering because it's right around my birthday.
I'm very excited about it. Four matches have been announced so far, Adam. I'm just going to...
Five.
Oh, there's a fifth.
Yes. I looked up the card. When you mentioned this, I looked up the card. So we've got...
I'll list my four, and then you throw the fifth one out. Surprise me. Main event, world champion Jay Briscoe has not been pinned or submitted in almost 2 years against the Survival of the Fittest 2014, that is, winner Adam Cole. That is awesome. World Tag Team Championship, in the match that I might be most excited about, Red Dragon defends the belts against the Time Splitters right out of New Japan and into your living rooms, fans, December 7th, Alex Shelley and Kushida. You've got Roderick Strong against Adam Page, kind of a mentor, kind of gone awry role where he was under the tutelage of that faction and broke free, the decade that is. We got the television championship match, Jay Lethal, who I just want to say I was watching him versus ACH, main event from ROH TV 2 weeks ago the other morning, and, you know, nobody's talking a lot about ROH. Even more so maybe Jay Lethal, but I think he's one of the most quietly most improved guys. But it's something that it would take time to really break out my theory, so I'll save it on the shelf for another day. But he will be defending the belt against Matt Sydal.
That'll be a good match.
That will be.
The fifth match that actually was just announced today, just a couple hours before we started recording this, I'm not too familiar with this. I know one guy mainly from Chikara. I have no idea who the other guy is. Brian, maybe you can help me out with this one, but it's Artie Evans versus Moose.
Yeah, so Moose is kind of like your muscle, and Beta Scott was able to somehow bring him into the fold and kind of use him to kind of maintain the streak that Artie Evans is on, but that could only last so long. Moose was getting tired of being second fiddle to the pipsqueak, Artie Evans, and so now things are going to come to a head. They've done a fun thing with the streak with Artie Evans. I got to see an ROH show in Cincinnati around August, and they were on the show, and a lot of fun. It's a good act. It would be a fun kind of semi-comedy, mostly comedy match, I guess, to break up the hard-hitting action elsewhere on the card. And so that's good.
Yeah, I recognize Artie Evans from Chikara. I really enjoy Chikara. But if you go back and watch some of the stuff, I think it was from 2012, 2013, he was in there as Archibald Peck.
Yep.
And he was also, he did two characters in Chikara. He did the Archibald Peck character, the band leader, and he also did Mixed Martial Archie.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was a pretty cool gimmick.
We are live!
That's right.
Sorry, I was getting to...
Your live show's coming up.
R.D. Evans. I'll get to that. I was just going to say, if you're unfamiliar with Moose, he has kind of the look and the build of in his prime, which I guess was ECW, sci-fi era, Ezekiel Jackson, but he's much more athletic. He has some really cool offense, and that'd be cool. Yeah, as you were just saying, live shows. I've got a couple I'm going to, and I'm really excited about it. As I mentioned before, I kind of took about a 6-month sabbatical from wrestling for the first time in my life, and I'm renewed and reinvigorated, and I'm going to 2 big shows coming up. December 27th, WWE's Holiday Tour, which might have a wacky name, but what I'm excited about this show for a couple reasons. One, it's the first show post-Christmas, so I can imagine it's going to be a fun affair. Hopefully the roster is in good spirits. I mean, they're back on the road, of course, but they just had the holidays. I can imagine it's going to be kind of a loose, fun show. Also,
it's a house show.
Yeah, it's a house show, which I've been to a lot of JW events, but this is only, I believe, my third, maybe house show, third or fourth. It's been quite a while. I think the last house show I went to was main evented by an Eddie Guerrero, Rob Van Dam steel cage match.
I know the last WWE house show I went to actually was, I think it was, I want to say 2008. It was a SmackDown brand house show.
Ooh.
It was Finlay and Jamie Noble were on the card. I'd have to go back and look up the card, but it was a really fun show. It was probably one of the best shows I'd been to that year.
You know, it's funny that I mentioned, too, that cage match I mean, even at the last one I went to, because actually the one before that, the which was around, like, 98, 99, right when Rock went hill, was it Rock Bossman, maybe, in a cage match that main event at that one? I don't know, but it's talking been about quite
the
a while.
Are you talking about the one at the Cincinnati Gardens?
I am.
I was at that show.
Oh, I did not know that.
I think it was Rock. It wasn't a cage match. It was Rock and Big Show, I think, was on the card. And then Boss Man was in the main event in a tag match. But I can't remember who he tagged with.
I remember that the real man's man, Steven Regal, in flannel vest, was there.
Yep, he was.
In that gimmick.
I'm thinking...
And he beat my boy, I think, Too Cold Scorpio in like 40 seconds. Which kind of ruined my night.
The match... I'm thinking the main event of that house show... At the Gardens, was Bossman and Shamrock against Triple H and X-Pac, but I could be wrong about that. Ooh. That sounds about right.
Yes, I know the New Age Outlaws fully got... But anyway, getting back to the holiday show December 27th, another thing that's cool about this, Adam, is that it's going to be a homecoming for local boy done good, Dean Ambrose. He's announced to be on the show, as are the Matadors and a few other talents. And so I will be there. It's also going to be cool because my wife and I are going with 6 other people. So it's going to be a group affair. It's going to be a lot of fun. She hasn't been to a wrestling show, I don't think, since the epic bloodbath, Jerry Lynn, Roderick Strong match from ROH and Dayton a couple years back. So that'll be a lot of fun. Everybody in good spirits again because of the holidays. And then in January, as part of the Winter Warriors Tour, I got to say I like the name. ROH will be back. My neck of the woods. They'll be in the oven in Dayton, but it won't be hot like it typically is there. It'd be pretty frosty.
Yeah, is it the Montgomery County Fairgrounds Coliseum?
Yeah, Dayton, Ohio. And so no matches are announced, and they're usually pretty bad about getting matches announced. Like the last show I went to of theirs back in the summer, even, you know, I was refreshing the page daily trying to get an update on what was going to be on the card, and it took a while for them to spill the beans. So I don't intend to see too many matches announced for that until around January.
That's a really good building to watch wrestling in.
It's all on the 31st, which kind of hurts because that's the same night as the return of Anderson Silva, main eventing UFC 180. Will that be 3 or 4? I think 3.
False count.
But Nick Diaz, Anderson Silva. So I will have to see that show via other means, not live, because I will be at ROH. Enjoying, hopefully seeing some good work, seeing some Michael Elgin and whatnot. So those are 2 shows I'm going to be looking at, and you definitely will get some feedback from me either in the blog in text form or on the podcast. Just briefly, MMA this past weekend on Fox Sports 1, the UFC fight card in Austin, Texas. I have not. I'm up to the main event. I actually was being a good family man. I took my niece out to see the new Hunger Games movie Saturday night. So again, I miss UFC Live. I've been playing catch up when I can. But Adam, I want you to talk next. Final bit. You said on the last show you saw this being how things went together, and you were right. Impact signed.
Impact has a new home. It's Destination America, like I mentioned on the last show, that is available on Time Warner Cable for those out there listening who have Time Warner Cable. From some of the things I've heard online, it's the show's going to be completely revamped.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
New attitude. I'm really, actually really looking forward to it. I thought on Spike, especially the last couple months, even though I haven't really had time to watch it regularly, the episodes I have watched, they came across as really bland, really dull, even though they were filming the Manhattan Center, which I actually thought added a really good vibe to the show. And they brought back the six-sided ring, which made it look more unique. I still think it felt a bit dull.
Yeah.
It's kind of there, you know? But I think with going on this new channel, they're going to revamp the show. They're going to, I guess, they're gonna reboot, for lack of a better term. But I think it's going to be exciting. It really yeah. is.
You know, I think the last couple months of Impact, it's almost a tale of two Impacts. You would have some exciting segments and then some that just fell so flat right on their face. I mean, anytime you've got King Kennedy in the ring in 2014, oh man, that hurts as a wrestling fan to be subjected to that sort of programming. And then you've got Abyss working still, you know, hardcore quote-unquote matches. But then you would get glimmers, you know. Actually, Bobby Lashley, maybe even more so than Jay Lethal, could be the most improved guy, at least in mainstream U.S. wrestling. He had some really good stuff on TV with the likes of Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries. It's been a mixed bag, but I'm also excited for this revamp and reboot. It's time. Hopefully it will breathe a little life.
Time.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll breathe a little life into the... You know, I know obviously the program itself, as far as the production and everything, will be different. At least that's what they're saying. I wonder, do they dare tempt fate and try to break from continuity and just revamp the whole company? Because are you just go ahead and accept all the past tradition and you know, title histories and whatnot?
I don't think they're going to do a complete blow up like they did in WCW when Russo and Bischoff took over.
Yeah.
I do think they will, like I said, maybe we'll get a new announced team too. I would be fine with that. Maybe you get Josh Matthews on commentary with TNA. I think that'd be cool. Get some fresh blood in the announce booth.
Or just bring back Don West and you know, problem solved.
Yeah, there you go. You could do that too.
I think, Adam, too, there's certain people on the roster. I don't know, man. Bobby Roode as your face champion. The guy is... He's probably the most unlikable personality in modern wrestling for me. He's one of those guys, I find him really hard. And he doesn't, that's the funny thing, is that he doesn't really try to play up being a face, but he's booked as one. You don't even see him slapping hands with kids, you know, using the easy techniques, popping to the local crowd or this or that. To me, I mean, the guy's a heel. That's what he was born to do, and I have a really hard time, you know, stomaching him as a face champion. But that's neither here nor there. We'll see. In January will be an interesting time, and we'll definitely be following those developments closely here on NHO.
Yep. A couple things before we wrap up here. We got two upcoming episodes. Next week, hopefully, we'll be able to get our buddy Tim on the line here. We can do the show we talked about last week. The early days of the UFC, where we go back, talk about the SEG days, some of our favorite moments, fights, matches, wacky stuff like that, kind of analyze that time period, how does it hold up, et cetera, et cetera. And then, Brian, I shared this news with you earlier, and I kind of mentioned it earlier on in the open here, but we have a guest coming up soon. I didn't think we'd be able to even get a guest at all for this program, if not let alone this early. But we're going to be talking to Carl Stern, who I mentioned earlier, and we're going to be talking to him regarding Southeastern and Continental Championship Wrestling, one of the forgotten territories housed down in Alabama.
That's right.
That'll be a really fun show, Brian. I don't know how familiar you are with Southeastern and Continental.
Just to a pretty small extent. I mean, it is true that it's one of the forgotten territories. Not only does not a lot of footage exist, but and this is something we can kind of maybe talk to him about as well, is that the aftermags and stuff didn't really write about them a lot. And I've done some research already and kind of read about, there's a reason why, and I don't want to spoil that. We'll talk about it on the air, but they were kind of kept away, actually, from the territory for fear of, you know, hurting kayfabe. So Yeah, I don't know a lot about the territory. I know a lot about a lot of the names that are associated with it. It'd be interesting to hear about it from a fan's perspective and somebody with so much knowledge and passion for this great industry. So that will be cool, man. It kind of caught me off guard completely out of left field, and I said, hey, you know what? Let's do it. I would love to learn and be taken to wrestling school by Carl Sturr and talk about the Continental Territory.
Yeah, so that's what's coming up here on the show. And if we can't get Tim on the line next week, then we're just going to do another grab bag show.
I mean, anybody that can have, you know, Tim Horner and Tom Pritchard exist in the same world at some point or another, hey, I'm game. So
yeah. We'll
talk about Continental. Yeah, the UFC show will be cool too. Getting Tim on the air, he's a personality and a half.
That's
I
right.
Think our fans will dig him.
And
I'm trying to get this biography, unauthorized, published. I'm working on about Alex Riley. No, I'm just kidding, man. Again, another of my jokes. I've had several tonight. Adam, anything else, man?
Just to note that the show will probably be going up at some point on Tuesday the 25th. Tuesdays will not be our regular days during the week for podcasts. Thursdays will usually be our regular days. We're putting it out a couple days early this week because of Thanksgiving and the holiday and whatnot. So, but yeah, look for the show to debut on Thursdays. If it's a holiday week, maybe a Tuesday or Wednesday before the holiday, so you can check it out over your holiday break. So, I think that's going to be it for this week. Brian, it's been a great show, and we will chat with everybody next week.
Yeah, see you guys. Have a good one.